Host Michael Gaskill, and we have a very exciting episode today. So we've done several shows this year on Oregon's 2023 legislative session, and that just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. So as the dust settles, I wanted to look back on the session, revisit some of the bills we dug into on previous episodes, and explore how folks can keep pressure on their legislators between the sessions. And I couldn't think of a better person to guide us through the good, the bad, and the ugly of this legislative session than one of Oregon's most tireless climate champions, State Representative Mark Gamba. I've known Mark since I worked as the field director for his 2020 congressional campaign, so I knew I could trust him to give a no BS account of his perspective on the session. I didn't, however, realize just how honest and unfiltered he was prepared to be. So he had a lot to say about how business gets done in Salem, and I think his perspective is one that you don't often hear from any politician, regardless of party affiliation. We covered a lot of ground, and I just can't bear to edit it down to 30 minutes, so I'm breaking our conversation up into two episodes. Today, we'll hear the first half of our conversation, and I'll release the second half in 2 weeks. So make sure to subscribe to Coast Range Radio wherever you get podcasts, so you can be sure to catch the full conversation as well as all of our show archives. If you have any feedback or questions, don't hesitate to reach out. My email is michael@coastrange.org. Okay, let's jump in. Mark Gamba represents House District 41, which encompasses Milwaukee, where he served as mayor for over 7 years, Oak Grove, and parts of Southeast Portland. And I am so honored to have him join us here today. Representative Mark Gamba, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Great. Well, I want to dig into, like I said, the good, the bad, the ugly. I want to touch on some priority bills. But just to set the scene, I wonder if you could kind of give us some of your big picture takes on the session. This is your first session as a representative. How would you grade it overall? What are your first impressions?
Well, obviously the elephant in the room is that, you know, the half Senate walked out for, 6 weeks, which is hugely problematic in general. And that has to become a top priority for Oregonians that hope to cause any significant change on our climate policy, on the way we address forests, all of that stuff. Until we change the quorum rule, we are going to be held hostage by the minority. So setting that aside, which is a big thing to set aside.
Yeah, no, we'll get back to that.
My impression is that the system is not a good system. I think there were over 4,000 bills introduced. Each committee had an hour and a half meeting twice a week. Most of the committees, there are some ones that had more than that, but serious policy committees like housing and homelessness, which I was the vice chair of, we had an hour and a half meeting twice a week. And I think we had something like 90 bills that were assigned to our committee, which means you're not going to have the time to hear them all for sure. And the ones you do hear, you're not going to have the time to discuss in any kind of real way amongst the committee members. So we would have hearings. Sometimes questions straight up weren't allowed of the people who were speaking, and there was absolutely no discussion of any of the bills that occurred amongst the entire committee. So we could, in 5 minute spurts where we could find one another or on the floor or something like that, we could have conversations one-on-one or maybe a couple, three of us together. But, you know, some really important bills came across that transom, and we as a committee did not get to discuss them. And that is the norm. That is the way the legislature functions. And I find it to be not productive to good legislation. It's either fully baked or somebody hates it enough to try and make an amendment to fix it. And they're doing that on their own and then trying to convince the rest of the committee to go along with it. It's a poor system. So, I think in the end, it results in the distrust that people kind of generally have of government, because they see us passing bills that, like, there were a lot of silly bills that were passed because they were easy, because nobody hated them.
Mm-hmm.
They passed. They're not going to accomplish anything important. And then there were hundreds of things that were very important that didn't pass. And there were bad bills that did pass because there wasn't the opportunity to really explore them. And so I am a strong believer that we should have bill limits. I'm a strong believer that a 1 6-month session every other year is insanity. I mean, maybe that made sense back when the population of Oregon was the same as the population of Tigard, but it's significantly more than that now. And the problems we have are far more complex and far more important and big, and we don't do them justice. So that's kind of my just broad overarching impression of the legislative process in general.
Mm-hmm.
This session in particular was very focused, at least initially, on two things: on housing, which is important and is right, we should be addressing that, and then making sure that we've set ourselves up to have the opportunity to have a microchip plant come to Oregon and bring all of those high-paying jobs, theoretically, that it would bring. I think that particular process was a little fraught, and in the end, the housing process was also fraught. I don't think we passed some good bills out of housing, don't get me wrong, and some of them will make a difference, but we didn't address the actual problem, which is that we can't build housing as fast as we need to build it because we don't have the workforce. We messed around with land use laws. We messed around with making cities do things differently. We messed around. We threw a whole lot of money at it. But the bottom line is, everybody that does construction is doing construction right now. And so no matter how much more money you throw at it, no matter how much you gut the land use system, you're not going to get significantly more housing until you solve the workforce problem. And there was no effort in that front whatsoever.
Hmm, that's interesting. Is that a matter of incentives for people to move here?
I think there's a variety of things. One of the things that I would like to do, and that I'm going to try and see to table this during the interim to discuss, is thinking about the way our high schools function. I don't know if you're familiar with the German system, but kids have an opportunity to sort of get on tracks pretty early on. And so then the things they're learning in high school focus towards a career. It doesn't require, you know, they can change that at any point, just like you can in college. But at least it gives them a direction and an opportunity. So if we start in high school and start looking at sort of each child individually and what their strengths are and what their interests are and what their aptitudes are, and then nurture those as opposed to saying you must go to college if you want to be successful.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, you can make a six-figure income being an electrician. And we know we need millions of more electricians right now, today, let alone what's coming in the future.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is like a whole episode topic in its own right, but we should probably move on. But I did really quick just want to circle back and agree with a point you made earlier, that I am also just completely baffled by the fact that the Oregon legislature basically treats governing Oregon as like a part-time side gig. And I just can't understand why we don't have legislature sessions like the majority of the country, where we have full-time legislators doing full-time legislating. Is that even something, again, I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but is that even on the table? Are leadership even thinking about that as as a proposal?
Well, I talked to Rayfield about that early in the session. I was like, this is crazy. There is way too much. We're not getting stuff done. We're not digging into these important bills in these committees. We should be having long. He's like, that's not something we can fix as a legislature. That's something that has to happen. It's in our Constitution. So we would have to take it to the people. But the legislature could create the bill that would do that and then refer it to the voters.
Mm.
But yes, we need a full-time legislature. We should be in session maybe 8 months every year. Break it up like 2 month blocks or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You could get creative, but it's we need to pay legislators a living wage, because a lot of the people are there can be there because they're independently wealthy. Well, guess what independently wealthy people vote for? They vote for things that benefit the wealthy. Even if they're good people, even if they're nice people with good hearts, what they know and what they understand and what they're going to advocate for, because humans are humans, are things that are going to benefit the rich. And that's, overriding the problem we have writ large, both at the state level and the national level, is that we have millionaires running the process, and then we wonder why it doesn't work for poor people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to discuss more about, your overall impressions about working in the building. But before we do that, maybe we should actually dive into some of the specific bills, and then we can kind of go back to, your general impressions and things like that. So as you mentioned, thousands of bills were introduced, hundreds were passed, and there's no way we can cover even a fraction of that today. So actually, before we get started on some of the specific bills I want to ask you about and some of the specific bills that you probably want to discuss, do you have recommendations if folks want to go deeper on all this, find out more information about all the bills that were passed? Do you have recommendations of where people can go to learn more?
Well, I doubt that any of your listeners want to learn about every single bill that we passed.
Right. Yeah.
Would be bored out of their minds. I would suggest that, on the topics they care about, they dig into that, and depending on what those topics are, that's going to be the avenue by which you find the most relevant information. Because frankly, I would direct them to OLIS and they could read the bills that passed and stuff. But, I would say the Republicans are right about one thing. We do not write bills that the average eighth grader could read, which is actually the law. And I will say that we do not write bills that the average legislator can read.
Yeah.
I know that's a horrible thing to say, and it's going to be very disheartening to a lot of people. But I've been used to reading bills and code for the last 13 years. I was on the Planning Commission, then I was on the City Council, and then I was a mayor. And I got pretty good at reading legalese. And I struggled with a lot of the bills. And I would call up lawyers who were involved in that very issue, and they couldn't directly answer a question I had about what this phrase meant or what this did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's reality, and it's horrible. And it's counterproductive to exactly what you're talking about, having the general populace engaged and understanding what's happening to them in their state. So, the lawyers will argue, well, you can't write legal documents in plain language because then they're harder to get enforceable and accurate. And I would say, fine, it may be hard to do. Nonetheless, we should do it.
Yeah. Or at least some kind of executive summary of what they mean, because I agree with you. It is hard to parse.
Well, there is kind of an executive summary, but the problem is the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
The executive summary will say something like, addresses land use system to create more housing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm saying something between that and having to be a five-term legislator to understand it.
Or a constitutional lawyer, more to the point.
Yeah. Well, so what I often tell folks is, find organizations that you that align with your values and see what they have to say about the bills that have passed and didn't pass. Like, like Beyond Toxics, we partner with them on some collaborative work. And I know that they, as well as a bunch of other organizations that do engage in the legislative process, throughout the session, they'll put out calls to action, et cetera. And then after the session, they'll put out, their rundown on the session. And so, I was wondering if you have any, favorites, organizations that you trust or anything. And if you don't, that's fine.
Well, no, that's exactly right. That is the best way to learn about issue areas that you care about, is to get connected with organizations that are engaged at the state level. There's a lot of them that I utilize and trust. 1,000 Friends of Oregon is one of the obvious and easy ones when there are land use questions and the bill is, as I described earlier, hard to parse what it's actually going to do. I reach out to, the lawyer at 1,000 Friends, and they do a good job of getting information out to people, along with the environmental groups and the housing advocacy folks. So yeah, depending on what your issue is that you care about, find a group that supports that, and they will be one of your best sources.
Yeah, and now's a great time to start making inroads and building a relationship with your local legislator as well, and find out, how they voted on different things. Have a conversation now that they're out of session.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully we'll touch on that again as well, how to get in touch with folks, et cetera. But yeah, let's dig into some of the bills. How did some of your top priorities fare, especially, but not exclusively, but especially as relating to things like climate, environment, forest issues?
I'm gonna get myself in trouble as a legislator, because I know what I'm supposed to do right now is talk in glowing terms about the amazing climate bills that we got passed and how important they were and, what a big deal that they are. And yes, some good bills were passed, and the people that worked on those worked their asses off to get those passed. And I do not want to throw any shade on any of that. But the broad strokes reality is we didn't pass a significant climate bill this. And I've said that with those folks in the room, and they push back, and I'm like, okay, so tell me how close that's going to get us to our GHG targets that this state has, which, by the way, are not even as strong as the IPCC. So we have state targets that if we meet them, we still fail, I guess is the most blunt way to say it. And we're not meeting them. Haven't ever met our GHG targets. And none of the bills we pass this year will do that either. They're good things, right? There's things that will make it easier and help people switch over from a gas furnace to a mini split heat pump. There's a variety of things. There's a bill that begins to touch on the natural and working lands, i.e. the forests and farmland, but not nearly to the degree that we need to. And it's just a barely tiny baby first step. It would have been a great bill 30 years ago to set in process that, a direction that we could go. Today, it's a very weak sauce bill. The reason that we get weak sauce bills is because that's what we can get past. When one half of the building can walk out the door and essentially veto a bill, that's what you pass. You pass, small ball bills.
Well, I actually want to push on that a little bit, because even though, and I'm not pushing it in terms of disagreeing, but, even though we did have the longest legislative walkout in state history, which I feel like that's like something that now we say every session, it wasn't over environmental issues. It wasn't over industry issues. It was over, I don't even know how to charitably phrase the opposition to these bills, but, over, women's autonomy rights and over gun rights, et cetera. So it was these social, I guess, for a lack of a better way of saying it, these social issues, not kind of the things where industry jumps in to kill the bills. So,
well, yes, but to get those people back in the building,
yeah,
we had to agree not to pass certain bills.
Got it. Right.
So, and that included environmental bills.
Got it. Okay. So those were in the kind of subtext.
And because the legislators who have been around the block a time or two and are the ones that should have been bringing the big bills, they've brought the big bills before, and that has been what caused the walkout.
Mm.
So they sort of pre-limited themselves. And we had bills. There was a bill that would have required that heavy energy users become net zero essentially by a certain date. So think server farms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of storage, places like that. And that didn't pass, and it didn't even have a chance. There were, because it touched on natural gas, one of those facilities is saying that they're doing something green because they're going to take natural gas, turn it into hydrogen, and they're going to use the hydrogen to make their energy for their server farm. And that's not environmental.
Right.
And because it touched on natural gas, there was automatic opposition.
Mm.
All three bills that touched on natural gas did not pass. I had a tiny one that should have not been that big of a deal, but the unions actually locked up with the natural gas company to stop it.
Mm, yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, is that even though you didn't see them talking about we walked out because of this climate bill, climate bills weren't even introduced, or maybe they weren't heard if they were introduced, because we knew, or the chair of that committee knew, that they would cause a walkout.
So this jumps ahead to something I was going to ask. So we'll just stay on this for the moment. You know, I do want to dig into specifics of some of these bills, like the Natural and Working Lands Bill, which we discussed with Taryn Yazdani from Beyond Toxics a few episodes ago, and a few other bills. You know, so we did pass these, I think, meaningful bills. I agree with your critique of them as not nearly enough, but I want to give them the credit they're due as well. But even with that, you know, it feels like Oregon is lacking in real climate justice leadership in the Capitol. And I'm hearing you agree with that. And so is it just, you know, one party obstructing all of this, or do we need, you know, better climate leadership within the Democratic Party as well? And if so, like, how do we push for stronger climate and environmental leadership in the Capitol?
God, I'm going to get so sideways with so many of my friends down on the Capitol. So yes, it is in large part due to the threat of walkout and that we don't have a supermajority. Setting that aside, not every Democrat is an environmentalist. A lot of people are Democrats for different reasons. Some people are Democrats because they know the only way they get elected to that office that they ran for is by being a Democrat, because a Republican couldn't run for that office. But the bills that they champion would just as easily have been championed by a Republican. That's mm-hmm. the gentlest way I can say that. So there are only a handful, and I'm talking about a small handful, of people in the legislature for whom climate is the top issue, which to me is heartbreaking. In my mind, yes, we have to work on housing. Yes, we have to work on toxics. Yes, we have to work on, you know, abortion rights and all of the things. But if we do not get climate right in 50 years and 100 years, nothing else is going to matter. So that should be, in my mind, that should be a bar to, if you are trying to be elected as a Democrat, that should be one of the bars that you pass, is that you are a strong climate advocate. And that is absolutely not the case.
Yeah, I mean, like we've said on this program, like you've said, you know, we are in an emergency, and so many people are just not acting like it. Like, climate doesn't have to be your bottom line top issue, but it is the emergency that undergirds everything else right now. So
the question, the second part of your question was, how do we fix that?
Yeah.
And I would say that we need to start being more proactive. I love OLCV, but they prioritize who a Democrat they think they can get elected over a Democrat who will be a strong climate champion and is harder to get elected. For whatever reason, they're hearted, right? They're not going to be able to raise as much money, or they're not as well known, or they're whatever. And I know that's harsh, and they hate it when I say that. I have said that to their face. It doesn't change the fact that if we don't get out and start proactively finding climate champions to run, teaching them how to run, teaching them how to do the job, and preparing them to do it, we're not going to solve this, because otherwise we're leaving it to some random fate of who decides to blow up their whole life by becoming a state legislator.
Sounds a little personal.
Well, and it isn't for me, right? I was already a mayor making $300 a month. So for me, going to the legislature, hell, that's an 11 times increase in pay. For most people, that's a big pay cut. Going to $33,000 a year is a giant pay cut. And people, you know, the talking point that the people who support the status quo is that, well, it's just a citizen legislature, and you're expected to have another profession that you're making your living on. Really, how many professions can you walk away from for 6 months every other year, and right. then 2 months the other year? Right. Never mind the fact that during the interim, you need to be working on bills. You need to be gathering coalitions. You need to be learning what you need to know to be an effective legislator. So it is not a part-time job, but that's how we treat it. And so that is the crux of the problem, is that if smart, good people with good hearts who understand this stuff cannot do that job and live and raise their families and do all the things, they're not going to do it. So then we get what we get.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Coast Range Radio. Huge thanks to Representative Mark Gamba for speaking with me, and I'll release the second half of our conversation in 2 weeks. We cover a lot more ground, so stay tuned and subscribe to Coast Range Radio on any podcast app you choose to make sure you don't miss that or any of our shows. You can find show notes and resources in the podcast description of each episode, as well as our entire archive. Or you can find the show and learn more about the Coast Range Association at coastrange.org. That's coastrange.org. And once again, my email is michael@coastrange.org. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back with the rest of my conversation with State Representative Mark Gamba in just a couple weeks.